Welcome to the Lebo Lion Show, the biggest marketing and business podcast on the African continent. This is a learning hub where we share marketing, social media, and monetization resources that entrepreneurs, professionals, and creatives need to build the lives and businesses of their dreams. We do this through masterclasses and conversations with experts and thought leaders in various industries. On this podcast, we believe that your mindset is the most powerful tool you have to succeed. Come on a journey with us. Let's explore the world of business, money, and mindset from a growth perspective. Are you ready to go? Because 2023 has started and it's about to become the best year of your life. My name is Lebo Lion, the voice of marketing, and I will be your host for the Lebo Lion Show. Let's go. Is being queer an African?
Oh, so. Yeah.
And what is it to be African?
I don't want to say too much before they can say it. Let me leave it to them.
Listen, I think this one is for you, Anele. But I just, you know, I didn't grow up in a, in a very traditional family.
Yeah.
Staunch Christians, you know, I know nothing about my culture or my African tradition. And I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to come here and be like, well. This is the part where I look at you. And listen to what you have to say.
Lindani, before we go to Anele,
of course, he'll give us a better answer. For me, I think from an African point of view, the only thing that came to mind was the gender roles in being African. Indoda must, umama must. And growing up as a black man, as an African man, I am expected to do specific things. So the moment I prefer playing with dolls, I'll make an example.
Yeah.
Playing with dolls and not playing with cars, that's already something wrong. The moment men are sent out there into the crowd or sent into, if you grew up in the villages, you are sent to go herd sheep and stuff, and you're like, no, actually, I'd rather be with the aunt and cook and chop. Something is wrong with
I
you.
Hate it.
So for me, it's the gender roles. So when we define being African, it's the gender roles that come with being African, that a man is supposed to tick these boxes. And one of the boxes you need to tick is that when men are there going to fish, if you are a fisherman and men are there to go and herd sheep, you follow them, you go there and you carry your spear and you go and do that. The moment you say, no, man, I am full local, man, I'm full no mama, something is wrong with you. So it's the gender roles for me. And I was very fortunate that I was raised by females. I was raised by my granny and my mother. And so there wasn't so much of pressure in terms of gender roles, but there were expectations that I'm supposed to like Power Rangers. I'm supposed to wear blue. I'm supposed to like specific things, but I liked soapies. I wanted to watch,
yes,
you know,
The Bold and the Beautiful.
And then, and that's why some people even argue with me to go back to my earlier thing that, but if you like these things, wasn't that a sign for you to be gay? Then I'm like, no. So it becomes a whole thing. What does it mean to be African? Is an African man allowed to be soft? Is an African man allowed to like the finer things in life? Yes or no?
Yes.
It becomes a very deep conversation.
And you know, before, you go jump into that, I'm always going to play devil's advocate here because I know what people are thinking when they're watching this. And you said something, you said, I was raised by women. And I know people watching are already going to go, that's why he's gay. you know, already,
I must say, being raised by women made it more difficult for me to be gay because they wanted me to be their husbands they never had. They wanted me to be their fathers they never had. So being raised by women actually made it more difficult. But also, it was more difficult for me because I had no father to look up to. So being raised by a woman doesn't make you a softer man, by the way.
You're raising bombs here.
I'm raising bombs,
after
right?
After bomb,
yes.
After bomb.
But also, so don't think because I was raised by a woman, it makes me softer. Oh, they were soft. No, they were hard on me because, yeah. Indodamas, because now they are taking out what they thought a man is supposed to, because they actually have no manual also.
Misogyny and what is the word?
Patriarchy
and misogyny.
No, so they had no manual on what a man is supposed to be, firstly, but also the mom, the man who left my mom, I'm supposed to be that man and do better than my dad. Mm. I must do better than my grandfather for my grandmother. So there's so many layers to this. So there's like layer upon layer of like the pressure on me. And then I'm like, no,
yeah,
I don't want to be
a can of worms.
It's a can of worms, yes. Mm. So even now, I'm a father to a 5-year-old. Where is my manual on what being a father is? Last week, yes, thank you. But last week, you know, my son says to me, Daddy, where's your girlfriend? Ne? And I said to him, so he knows a friend of mine. I said to him, my girlfriend is this boy. He's like, no way, is dad. He can't be. So I already knew that my son, firstly, is not ready to have the gay conversation.
Mm.
Because people always say, no, your son needs to know that you're gay. And I'm like, he will know at the right time. You will not decide how I raise my son, firstly. But also, you will not decide the age and say, no, he's old enough to know. I keep on testing the waters. If my son still believes I should have a girlfriend, if he still believes that the person next to me should be a female, I have the room to educate, but also the space to allow him to be a kid and not rush this upon him to say, no, you know what, actually your dad is gay and your dad has a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a bit cheeky for me because I need to educate him, but also remember he's a 5-year-old, he's a kid. He goes to school where kids are dropped off by mom and dad. That is his norm. And he lives with his mom and the grand, and I'm the dad. And in his books, like, I'm the dad, and there's like, there can't be two dads, you know? Eventually, he'll get it. And so it becomes tricky in terms of when is the right age to actually tell him, you know, am I slowing the process? Am I rushing it? So, but that's a different dynamic. It's a different conversation for another day. So also being a gay dad is difficult.
You said a lot there. There's a lot to unpack. But Anele, is being queer an African?
Certainly, no. And my answer is, queerness or expressions of queerness in Africa have always been there.
Yeah.
And there's literature that reflects that.
Yeah.
Now, the concern is, in our queer existing knowledges, why do we have a Zulu word called Mningi?
It's called what?
Mningi. Meaningly, it's two things, bulls coming together. Mm.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
The sound, mm, right?
What is it used in context?
In context, is in two men coming together, nothing can come out of it. That's why it's called Mningi.
Okay.
And also the idea around a stone, nothing can come out of
a
queer body. Those were names that were used to denote people who identified or who kind of showed expressions or attractions to other people of the same sex.
Oh.
So we've got normal kasi words, imofi, istabani, all of that, to define what is non-normative within an African context.
Yeah.
So for me, it suggests that it's there. It's a reality that has always been there. The challenge around the construct of being queer, being gay, is un-African, stems from the normative ideas of heterosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
African, in the way of Africanism, is described in the context of gender, what Lindani spoke about, and Powerhouse around gender binaries and all of that, it thrives on it. So it makes it look like if that's the norm, we only know a man and a female, it's an African thing that families within African context would be out of these normative groupings or kind of genders and all of that.
Mm.
Now for me, to say that being gay is an African experience, being queer is an African experience, there are people who were known as Lalin, that uba bubani akahlangani nabantu abangomama. Yeah, right? Or we had people would walk around and not say something. That's why, even in my family, that I have an ancestor whom, out of interest, I am told that Unedlozi, that used to live the life that you are living, while Umuntu, who was probably queer and never touched a woman in his life. right? And it's part of my ancestral journey. And part, he was a warrior in the way of how he's described in my ancestral journey. So he basically said, man, it's not a coincidence that I'm gay, because I have a literal ancestor that is gay. But the reality is, for me, I want to touch on the expressions of African spirituality and how this fits in. The bigger question we should be asking ourselves, how can we participate in African rituals that can enrich our identity as queer people? The question I asked at one stage, I was doing a talk with TikTok creators. I asked them, what is our imagination of an African queer picture looking like? If I say I want to be queer in Africa, all we know in Africa at the moment, or expressions of queerness, it's a Western idea and construct of what it means to be a gay man.
True.
A Western idea of what it means to be a trans woman.
Yeah.
But is there really an African worldview and an African perspective that I can say, this looks like it? And through using my social capital, I've tried to do that. To say, as a queer man, if you want to process or kind of start process of surrogacy, we can start negotiating the processes of inkawulo. Yes, I may not be paying, because I didn't sleep with you, so I didn't damage you. But I'm doing the rightful thing to say, your ancestors and their ancestors have allowed this to happen. So mihlonipha the womb that is embodied through you, that manhlawula inkawulo, I pay respect to that family. That's how we are participants of culture on African spirituality. Secondly, if we say we're going to negotiate lobola, an African construct, we are not doing it the way of how it's done, but we're doing it as a way of showing respect to say we are acknowledging this union and bringing it closer to amadlozi, agiti, and yours. So there's a lot of respectability in how we should be participants in terms of participating in culture. So for me, there's a greater space for us as queer people that we can still do inkawulo, we can still do ulobola, we can still do all these other rituals. I can safely say I'm a traditional African man. When I am at home, my queer identity is not questionable.
Yes.
But I participate because I am I'm still a man that participates in everything that's being done at home. How should I be excluded on the basis of my sexual orientation?
Yeah.
So if we can hold space for our rituals, for our practices as queer people, we're doing it because we're human, not because of our sexual orientation. Hence for me, I say, being queer is not an un-African thing. If we can be called by our ancestors, I'm sure in my ancestors, it's the least thing that they expect me to be worried and bothered about.
I think, you know, as you're talking, I'm steadily thinking about, you know, how you make mention of the fact that our representation of what it means to be queer is very Western. What it means to be trans is Western. And I think I speak a lot about it on my radio show as well, to say there's been a deletion of our history as African black people, and then as African queer people as well. So I can't go to a book. I can only find information about America, Stonewall, but I can't find about Nigeria. And I see all these things pop up on social media where people speak about how, you know, in their countries, queens were married to women and men were married to men, and, you know, they had places where they were sitting. I don't want to touch on it too much because it's something I don't know. But however, it's the fact that we also need to work very hard in preserving the knowledge that is currently there.
Exactly.
And ensuring that the people that walk the journey after us are able to interpret it. Like what you're saying about inkawulo, somebody that's going to, you know, have a school, do surrogacy, has to think
about adoption,
has to think about those elements that you speak about. You know, and I'm learning a lot because I grew up in a family, we've never done anything traditionally. I don't know anything traditionally, you know. And I feel like it's part of me that has been taken away maybe by the history of my lineage. But at the same time, when you chat about it, we need to start pinning down as well.
Yeah, and that's why I'm using social media to say, oh, actually that guy is gay and he's busy with cows. He's busy in Samo. I do everything literally as a gay person at home. So ideally, our ancestors themselves are not bothered by us being queer.
Yeah.
But they are bothered by, can you take this responsibility that we're giving you to be a healer? I come from a strong tradition of healers. And they are concerned less about me being queer, but concerned more about the impact I have in society.
Yes. I really love what everyone has been sharing on the panel. And it's actually got me thinking about, for me personally, I grew up in a very traditional, you know, my parents are all about the Venda culture. I knew everything, I know it, you know? And there was always this low-key threat of, if you don't do what we say is Africanness in this way, you will be excluded from the tribe. You know, and I feel like that also happens to the queer community, where it's like, if you dare be queer, we're going to exclude you from Africanness because you're not African. You know, you can't be because here are the rules and you're not following them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a real threat to that. And I think that's also why so many people suppress it for so long. It's like, but I want to be African. I'm African. There's literally, I can't change being African. Everywhere I go in the world, people will think I'm an African person. So I need to hold on to this culture for as long as I can. Anyway, before we rolled the cameras, we actually had a really cool conversation about dating in the queer community. And dating. Lord have mercy.
Lindani was married.
Lindani was married, we know this. But, you know, we were talking about the realities of dating. African culture is very exclusionary, I feel.
It is.
I've experienced it in different ways. Yeah,
and the last point that you made, that people are like, but I'm gay, at home, I won't be allowed. And this whole thing of gender things, I'm very clear. Dibano Klava is in all of it. Not because I'm gay.
But I just don't like it.
Ekai is what we call Uminkabi Ekai, like the person that gets appointed. I am that person at home. All I do is to take Umkondo and say this, and it will be, it's gonna respond. And that's my role is done. And I go to Msamo, I go to the crowd, not because I'm gay, but because it's a role that has been assigned because I'm considered to be a wisdom bearer in the family, not because I'm gay. But obviously certain people are like, this is a responsibility. This person has been chosen. We've confirmed. We see it. So how do we say Aganam Faz? Now, it adds capital to have a consistent relationship with Georgia. That he has also become part of these rituals. That on certain parts where they would say, Mizungoska as well. No, Chucho comes in as my partner to witness.
Yes.
He doesn't say anything again. Politics of him being Zimbabwean is a different thing.
Yeah.
But he is fully active involved. We had to go and introduce him to Msamo as a member because Giorgio is a dreamer. He tells me other dreams and I'm able to, probably Gogo wanted to communicate something I would not have seen it.
Deep.
And on that note, before we started rolling cameras, we were actually talking about dating in the queer community, and there were so many, I don't even want to say interesting because I feel like that undermines the spiciness of what we were talking about. But let's talk about very, very spicy. Let's talk about the pretty boys. Is that what you call them?
He said champagne boys earlier.
Champagne boys. What is
that? And I know I'm going to be beaten for this.
Okay. But that's my type. So as you speak about them, that's my type. So you know.
Your type.
Right.
I mean, for me, I'll speak from my personal experience. I did a pretty boy, which we happen now. Literally, you can say we're married. But we just need to do the formalities.
I'm here for it. I'll even dress you guys for the wedding.
We've been together for a long time.
No, I'm teasing. I'm saying I'm gonna dress them for the wedding. It's me getting a tender.
We've been living together for 6 years in one space. And our journey is quite interesting. We met on Facebook during the time of Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, like, it was just a snack. And one of those boys, like, I don't trust this one, but I just want to buy it.
Mm.
And first, long story short, by the time I met him, I was very broke. And the construct of what I imagined him to be and what I saw him, the kind of hippie powerhouse knows him. And I'm like, no, this one will hurt me so much.
Mm.
But I still gave it a try. I didn't know why, but I gave it a try. But our journey of our relationship has different trajectories that have showed me that queer black love in the context of two gay men does exist. I can safely say now it's solid.
Nice.
And we've gone through every trajectory of what any other typical relationship would go through, not because it's a gay relationship, but because it's in like any other relationship.
Yeah.
Obviously, certain nuances and all of that. But quite interestingly, dating a pretty boy from Joburg and I being a classy boy, royal boy, was a very difficult struggle for me.
Yeah.
My partner holded so much of social capital and understanding the dynamics of how this gay world works.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm from the township, for me, I'm like, I'm fine, and that's it. Kanti, I got myself into trouble that I needed to do a lot of unlearning and learning a lot of realities.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the grooving life in the gay community.
Okay.
I didn't know about the politics of money. And for the first year, I always say to my therapist, I deprived myself and I was so hard on myself that giving him the things that I thought he needed as a pretty boy didn't allow the relationship to grow, because our relationship began in a very wrong way, because I wanted to impress him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't feel like a good enough classy boy, and so giving him things was bad, and it messed up the trajectory of our relationship. It didn't really become a relationship in the beginning, and it was the typical kind of, because he's out there and seen out there as a pretty boy, I was then seen as the guy that finances that whole of that.
Okay. So is there an expectation with somewhat, the pretty boy dynamic?
And again, the pretty boy, it's a bit tricky one, because there are a lot of social politics in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who then finance that. And it then becomes a transactional contract, not a relationship.
I see.
Right? So with that, from my experience to where we are now, my pretty boy is still my pretty boy. I don't need to do anything. We live together. We've got two properties.
Nice.
And he's even in my estate.
Wow.
Right? Because of the trust and how the relationship has grown to be what it is now.
Hmm.
I've had some detours.
Thank you for the honesty.
The
how
boy,
are the wrong turns?
I suppose the little boy in me wanted the excitement and thing that, because I think now I've kind of arrived, I could test it out and try it out. That's when, this is my social construct.
Yes.
The pretty boys and the champagne boys.
Yeah.
That at the end of the day, you introduce yourself as a blesser, you introduce yourself as a financial contributor, then the nature and the dynamic of that relationship is going to be about mine.
Yeah.
But there's no love in there. But Shem, I had my first share and I knew where home is.
And home why. Knew that you knew that home was
there. Oh, no, he was very chilled. He said, yeah. I know you are in probably going through midlife crisis, and I admit this year I probably went through a hectic midlife crisis.
Yes.
But also realizing that I'm a fan about it. But
you
end up doing things that, unfortunately, a lot of us, and again, some of these construct top guys, you have to prove that we know them. I'm a bills, but then the clothing, again, you want your pretty boy to be seen out there by others.
Wow.
So you've got to finance it so that
I can
you can
relate.
Look the part.
You
tell
can
me
relate,
more.
Tell us more.
I can relate.
Where am I?
Okay. Yeah, you must tell us also. So you know so weird. I may laugh and joke and say pretty boy is my type. But I've been dating boys now for 5 years. But I'm still not sure what my type is. Because when I divorced a woman, the what felt right at that time was dating someone like this. From weave to weave, I'm being very honest.
Yes.
From weave to weave, from lipstick to lipstick, I'm used to going to Clicks and buying cosmetics for my partner. So for me, I wanted to still be a daughter.
You want to be a daughter.
Yes, but also before my daughter, where my partner must be more feminine, must be soft, and must be the woman in the relationship, and that's a different conversation for another day. Right? Mm. So for me, the idea would to be, must both be daughters, and we both can border, and we both can be Zulu men. No, something is wrong there. You know, and for me, it was a psychological thing where I think I was struggling to accept that I'm actually gay, and that being gay means I'm attracted to a man, whatever form or shape he comes in. If I love that, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I struggled because I thought I need to date a man, but who still embodies a female. Because I'm still coming from, I was a husband. And also for me, when we're walking in public, that's where I'm going. When you're walking in public, it mustn't look too odd. It must still be like, is it with a boy, is it with a girl? I understand what the are with, guys. When Zagalanlapa, I promise you, the first 2 years after divorce, then I threw myself and, you know, Tumi will confirm, into clubs, into shakers, into Liquid Blue, where you bump into different types of gay people every weekend. Then you learn a good time, man. There are boys who actually look like me, and I actually like them, you know. And Bata Bafana, yes, but also remove the weave. I still like those boys. But right now, I am 34 years old, and I'm still struggling in relationships because there's still a part of me that's like, can I really date another Lindani? Can there be two of us in a relationship and it works? I also date younger people because the idea of a man providing for me doesn't make sense.
Wow.
I date younger people because the moment a guy says to me, can I help you out or can I pay for this? Please leave. I'm independent. You know, there's that. So there's so many dynamics.
We need to unpack it.
So people say to me, oh my God, Lindani, why do you like dating these young boys? And it's not a power thing, and I'm going there because I think people think it's a power thing. For me, it's not.
It's a preference.
It's a preference, yes, but also my independence won't let me be supported by another man. You just cannot.
Don't you also think it's the pressures of, I mean, earlier on you spoke about how they expected you at home to be there.
It could be very psychological.
But I mean, you need to see. That's true. You know.
Yeah. It could be psychological. Just you're right. You know. But for me, even when I say to you, if I meet you today and I say to you, can we go on a date? I already know I'm gonna pay for the bill. It's not negotiable.
Oh.
Like, why is your card out?
What does it do for your identity to be the provider? What does it do for you?
Hey man, it just feels right, man.
So Lindani, you can't date me.
There's no way.
No, you guys couldn't.
You can't even surprise me with cologne.
Age, 34.
Listen to me. If you came to me now and you said to me, on our first date, I bought you cologne, you must leave with that cologne. So forget paying for the bill. Forget paying for the bill.
Date me. Date me.
Yes, forget paying for the bill. The most basic thing, you are carrying a gift, you're saying to me, I bought you cologne.
Yeah.
I'm like, I go when I'm inside.
What about the language of love? Yeah. What is language of love to buy you?
So I think that's why, and you're right, and that's why I date younger people because they are students, they're unemployed, they have no money. It's worked for me so far.
To do project management.
Yeah, we are built up.
No. My therapist is like, you like to be a father, clearly.
No. For me,
I mean, your son is your firstborn, but clearly.
let me take it somewhere that's not going to be so pleasant, but we do have to cover that.
Yeah.
I hear these conversations happening quite often, right? And people, when they speak about straight, heterosexual people dating in this way, so a 35-year-old man saying, I like to date 22-year-olds, people say that's predatory. They say, why would somebody do that? He shouldn't be doing that. Why is he going for people who are too young to understand someone like him? Blah, blah, blah. So in this context, would it not be the same thing?
No. And I was about to ask you, who decides the age group? Like, who sits and decides that as a 34-year-old, the starting age for me dating should be this? Who decides that first?
Legal age, right? It's 18.
Thank you. Don't go there.
Wait.
Okay.
Legal age is 18.
Okay, continue. Go
FYI,
deeper.
Just in case everybody
go
on
deeper.
Twitter is,
yes.
Just,
uh-huh.
You know, legal age is 18. Mm-hmm. And I think as we as adults, we also understand that there's a certain level of maturity that comes with, not necessarily age, but comes with the experience of life. And that is why when you get to a certain age, there's certain things or certain people that you can't date, or you feel like you don't want to date because, I mean, we can't connect, you know. But, I mean, transactional relationships, predatory, I think at 21 it's a choice. You choose.
To date an older man.
When I was 21, I chose not to date an older person.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there wasn't...
But it's so weird that you say
that... At
that
age, have the capacity to really make a good decision.
I did.
I'm going there, but it's so weird
what
that you say that... Mm-hmm.
For me.
Yes.
I also just think I like being independent.
Why is it a good decision to date people your age?
It might be anything less
because
than 20. Because not 24. Ish. No, for me, psychologically, you start becoming a person at 25.
Yes.
So, like, I'm thinking, Tindani, anything less than that, it's worth for me.
I get you. But for me, no. And I'm happy that we're having the conversation because my therapist asked me, she says, do you take your relationship seriously in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Am I dating for leisure? Am I like... Let me just have a cute boy next to me. Because she feels I'm sitting there. She feels I'm sitting there where I can have a 21-year-old boyfriend who comes on the weekend, but on Monday, please leave. You know? So so what he's saying that I met someone and we've been there for 6 years is not really my reality. I've never dated anybody for longer than a year.
Is it out of first choice or you have still looking?
No, I just feel like I get bored easily, firstly. Secondly, after 2 months, like, it's okay, you can go. Like, next.
You know, Linda's people are always going. Like,
yes, but there is one person that stayed, you know, remember him, right?
Yeah.
There is one person who stayed because that guy just refused to break up with me. Like, I'll be like, I'm done. He's like, okay, cool. And then...
I'm not.
And then he'll be like, okay, cool. I'm going to give you a weekend to cool off.
So you have more snack attacks than real deals.
Yeah.
Yes, and also for me, I love it. I think because I'm divorced, there's a part of me that says, no, I'll tell you. You see, Manji, guys, I promise you, this will end up becoming divorce. I'm going there.
Linda.
Because I'm divorced. Because I'm divorced,
I love your controversy. You actually said in the beginning, it gave us a disclaimer.
Yeah.
No, I'm very controversial. And my friends are like, we don't get you. And I say to them, because I was married at 25, I was walking down the aisle, by the way.
Oh, Lord.
At 29, I was getting divorced.
Oh.
There's a part of me that feels like I actually have lived. So, Manje, whatever I'm doing, Manje, Cecilia Pilangena, Cecilia Dalangena, are you in doubt? This is not serious.
Hold up.
Don't take this too formally. See,
I hear you guys talking about, you know, relationships and champagne boys and the complexity of the queer community as well is quite huge. And we spoke about this earlier. And now when I think about my dating experience, it's also kind of crazy and it also confirms how these, I hope I'm not problematic, champagne boys or soft boys or whatever, come about, right? I've had so many young men trying to come to me to say, Sekfuna, you know? And I said it earlier, it's so awkward for me if I'm meeting up with you and you're like, hey, please bring me a pack of cigarettes, or hey, please bring me this. It's awkward.
Hi, boy.
I'm full of money. I'm stingy.
I sent an e-wallet this morning to some boy. I'm not even kissing.
Wait,
you only breakfast. I'm not okay.
Listen, Liz.
I need a man like you.
It's so complex. It's so complex. And also, what I've also realized, and something that is very important, especially in the trans community, is that there's men who are targeting trans women, and they're willing to give off their bodies for trans women to be able to fund their lives. So the same as gay men, to be able to fund their lives. I mean, I know tons of men that have been in my friends' DMs. Like, for instance, I have trans friends. So when a man is in my DM, I screenshot and send it to my group of friends and say, do you guys know this guy?
Just to make sure you're not a victim.
98% of the time, they're like, but he was in my DM last week.
Yes.
Oh, he was in my DM 2 months ago. Yes. He was in my DM. So there's also that people are being, and especially the queer community in general, is being targeted in terms of, we are rich, we have money. I don't have coin. You might be shocked, and I don't have coin. But there's, you know, a huge target towards the queer community, and I'm gonna generalize it in terms of people in the queer communities can provide. They can give us money.
Yeah.
They have money.
Interesting.
And even criminals.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a voice note circulating that there's a place in Melville where people go, and that's where we should go because those queer people have money.
And men sleeping with men?
Yes.
Yeah, and the same.
So it's a transsexual thing?
Yeah.
Right? But I do want to emphasize this, that despite our liberal way of looking at things, they are traditional queer same-sex relationships that are working. And then there's a show now that's about celebrating celebrities, but there are a lot of queer people who are in happily good, romantic,
healthy
relationships.
Yeah.
It's just that some of us, we don't want to make it grow because there's this thing again in the queer community, so we're spoiled.
Or
the issue that I know Lindani's past, I know Lindani's history, and I personally have had to, if I was weak, what could have been good would have ended today, because my so-called pretty boy, cute boy, is a known person. Right, so eventually I had to stomach it and understand that this person, this is how I experience him. And at the end of the day, it is the opposite of what people experience him to be. But because of where he was, I met him when I was 23. He was at that time at the peak of his life when he was having fun.
Yes.
And I myself at that time was living life differently. But now we are solid. So there's hope. We've seen people as investors and many others who are in good relationships.
Mm.
But we can't run away from the fact that our relationships have been overly sexualized.
Yeah.
That people see us from a more sexual, desirable perspective.
Mm.
Right. So I don't want us to leave here thinking that we're all about casual relationships. I admire people like Linda, he's being honest. But ideally, there's a space for these traditional things, but it takes a lot of work.
Yeah,
to
make relationships
make
work.
Something that is non-normative and normal reality. In our families, there's still struggles. Some family members, with my partner at home, there's still struggles at work. People were like, I've lost jobs and gigs because I'm queer, and the show needs a psychologist that happens to be heterosexual who's married.
Yeah, no. Losing jobs,
it's normal.
It's very normal for us.
Right.
Wow. We have been cancelled from church.
Cancelled
in
many different spaces. So
it's very normal.
Our politics and identity is always problematized. But I do want to emphasize to people that they are healthy queer relationships that are working. And we still want to cultivate.
And also,
culture.
Please add the fact that healthy black gay relationships.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why we think the white people get it right and
we can't.
I mean, even the idea of being of surrogacy, adopting kids, it's like it's a white construct.
Yeah.
But we are working with my partner on what would work for us. Either surrogacy or, but again, in my case, I'd rather opt for surrogacy because I still want that for myself. Not because I subscribe to heteronormativity.
Mm.
I would love to have my own child. If I can have sperms that can be infused somewhere, why not?
Yeah, nice.
Woo, this has been a big conversation. I feel like we need a part 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things to cover, and right now we're just rushing on the surface, you know, because that's all we can do in an hour, right? And I guess this conversation is just to get people to start thinking different about what they've always known and to have the courage to ask questions, because I'm asking them questions.
Mm.
I really don't know. I am not a queer person. I don't have that experience. So I have to ask so I can understand, you know. And when you ask, you get people like Lindani sharing their stories, people like Dumi sharing their stories, people like Anene sharing their stories, and then you realize that actually we're all just people. Right? At the end of the day, the queer community is a community of people.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about the gender or the sex. It is people. And if you can understand that it's just another human being, you can approach them with empathy, you know, with respect, with kindness, with love. And I'm hoping that this podcast has helped you do that today. Before we end off, I'm going to ask each one of our panelists to leave you with a message. You can decide who the message is for, what the message is about. You can decide.
Can I ask
leave
that?
Our guest with a message, please.
Because you're really streaming.
Oh, Jesus.
So my closing message is, from my journey, allow the confusion. Allow the confusion. Sit in it until it makes sense.
Yes.
If I could speak to my younger self, I'll say to the younger Lindani, allow the confusion of, am I straight, am I bi, am I gay, am I into boys or girls? Allow the confusion. Trust me, I'm a better person from the confusion. With no extra voices trying to say, but you should be this. Allow the confusion, because there's somebody watching now who is confused.
Yeah.
You know, am I on this side, am I bi, am I straight, am I this? How did I end up being with the woman if I actually feel these feelings? Allow the confusion.
Yes.
And also in allowing the confusion, don't make drastic decisions.
Allow the confusion. That's your brand.
Yeah.
I love it.
I should actually print t-shirts.
Yeah, I love it.
Actually, let's print t-shirts. Next collection. Allow the confusion.
Wow. what can I say? I think I'm at a level where I'm trying to show trans women that it is possible to be and to do whatever you want and be able to permeate spaces that have been closed for you. It's been evident with, you know, the work that I do, the brands that I work with, that maybe, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have been educated, but it comes from a place of having the gut. And I think have the guts to build your own stage, have the guts to do what you have to do.
Nice.
And you're worthy, you're deserving, and you need, your voice is needed. Whether you speak or you show, your voice is needed.
Love it. And then?
For me, it's simple. Just be congruent. If you are congruent to yourself, everything else falls into place. The minute you are incongruent, you deprive yourself the opportunity to be and to rise to your ultimate level of self.
Sure.
So I would really encourage, if you are in a journey either of confusion, of exploration, of awareness, always be mindful of being congruent to yourself.
I mean, what can I say after those amazing closing statements, right? Guys, this was amazing. I'm sure if you're sitting at home, you're wishing this was an ending, because I know I am. Like, I wish we could be speaking for another 5 hours, because it's that amazing. Thank you so much for gracing my podcast with your presence and your knowledge and your experiences. I really value you, and I'm hoping that you'll come back again, because we really do need to have bigger conversations about this. And guys, if you're watching at home, don't forget to like, share, subscribe. Do all the right things that get people to watch our show, to engage, and to be part of the Label Lion community. And until next time, don't forget, the easiest way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. Come let me teach you a lesson. Come let me teach you a lesson. Label Lion with your tweets. Follow me back to my nest. Label Lion with the podcast. Teach you a lesson, because I got class. Label Lion with the impact. You be lying, that's a real fact. Come let me teach you a lesson. Come